Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and today is November the 14th, 2019. So today we're going to be talking about uncertainty and building on what we talked about on our last call and, you know, certain strategies and exercises for handling the unknowns, because there's so many of those in sports. And also if you're working with people in business and or musicians, anyone, things in life as well. So talking about how to navigate those unknowns in performance situations. And so I wanted to talk about how uncertainty affects performance and the anxiety that's created by too many uncontrollables, and it's sort of that fear of the unknown. And then if you can think about what situations you've been in where your athletes or performers have been unsure about situations, and then how to prepare for the unknowns and uncertainties. And also wanted to talk about bad calls and difficulties with referees and officiating and how to respond to that, because it's that's a really frequent one where there's judging involved, and it can really throw off one's game or performance by focusing too much on that, and how parents respond to that, how coaches respond, and it can be a real good situation to be able to work on emotional control. And also indecision can be an uncontrollable, you know, just not being able to make a quick decision, the right decision in a quick situation. And then asking your clients what parts are under your own control. So I know we have Paul on the call, and was there, let's see, other people I think have joined us, but some people might be on mute. Is there, are there other people that want to say hello, or just that have joined us? Okay, well, Paul, if you can hear me, and I think other people are on the call, but they're just on mute right now, so that's great. So, Paul, do you want to share you shared some good news. Paul's one of our certified coaches from Great Britain and from the UK, and you shared that you had a client that made the team GB. I assume you were talking about Great Britain. If you want to mention, you know, what you were working with, and your, don't need to mention the name, but if you don't want to, but how that all came about.
Hi, Dr. Joanne. Yeah, I'd be happy to. So,
can you turn up your volume a little bit? If you can speak a little bit louder. it's a little bit hard to hear. Is it?
Can you hear me now, Dr. Joanne?
Oh, yes, much better. Oh, much better. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So I've done three sessions with a mature triathlete called Sally Ann. She's not been doing triathlon very long.
What sport is she in?
I started off in triathlon.
Okay.
Yep, so it's the running, swimming, and the cycle ride. And initially she had a competition coming up, and she just wanted a few tips really on how to get into the zone, into a performance zone. So I did some work conversationally with her, you know, picking up on some of the obvious negative statements, reframing those, what could be a different way of looking at things. And I just gave her some tips really about, you know, what people do to get into the zone using her peripheral vision, her positive body language, positive self-talk, just simple stuff really. And then she went off, she had a competition that weekend, and then the following week she came back, she came up to me, she said, "Paul, I absolutely knocked it out of the park, can't thank you enough." And I thought, that's perfect, let's use that now. So she's got a really good example of when she was in the zone, let's just really use that. So I sent her the questionnaire that you gave to us about how, you know, questions to ask to elicit somebody's performance zone. And then I created a custom recording for her with some care and detail, using her favorite place and all the details of, you know, what was happening during that event. And then I also anchored it a little bit. So when I knew about the time she would really be replicating that performance zone, I asked for a favorite color. Think, imagine her favorite color, a word, a phrase, maybe even a soundtrack. So I really built on it a little bit in that recording.
Okay. I just heard a ding. Did someone else just join us too? I just wanted to welcome who joined us.
Yeah, hi guys, Matt Pandola.
Oh, hi Matt. Yeah, welcome. Yeah, and did someone else just join us too?
Hi, Dr. Joanne, it's Michelle.
Oh, hi, Michelle. So we've got Michelle and Matt, and right now, see, Paul is sharing work that he's doing with a client in the UK. So, a triathlete that just made the Team Britain, Team Great Britain. So, sorry, Paul, to interrupt. So go ahead. You're working with your athlete there, and you made a custom audio for her and had her imagine a color.
Yeah. Yeah, so I did the custom recording, and I also anchored it a little bit, that feeling within the recording, using, you know, a favorite color, a trigger word, a soundtrack as well. And then I sent her the recording. She used that every day. And then the next thing I got was a message saying she'd been selected for Team GB in the triathlon, which was not something we'd talked about or expected. So, you know, it all worked exactly as it should do.
So is that the national team for Great Britain?
It is, yeah.
Great. Yeah, congratulations. That's exciting. So does that mean she'll be, is that for just one specific competition or for the whole year?
So I think there are four events coming up, effectively qualifying events now, where she takes part with other representatives of Team GB. But it's down season now, so these will be next year.
Okay, great. Yeah, congratulations. That's awesome. Yeah, so
thank you.
It's really nice to have, you know, you got certified in our program and then starting to work with athletes and then to have someone make the team right away, a Team Great Britain is a real honor. So that's exciting. Yeah, if you down the road, if you want to get a testimonial from her or a statement or something, that's always nice. If she is comfortable with that, you know, either text or audio or video, then you could use that on your website, kind of thing, or you know, just lends credibility to you and to the work that you're doing too. So yeah, so great. Congratulations on that. And then I know you had a question also that you sent in. I'll answer maybe part of it now and then part of it at the end of the call.
Yeah,
do you want to ask your question?
Yeah, so given your many years of experience in this field, obviously you know what the common themes are by now. I was interested to know what are the top few things that people come to you about they want help with, you know, in terms of sports psychology. What are the common problems people are looking to solve?
Yeah, I think there's so many, and one of the primary ones that I hear first is, you know, I can perform, I do so well in practice, but then I fall apart in the competition. And so there's a huge difference in performance between the performing at, you know, when they're practicing and then when the pressure comes on for a competition. So that's a huge one to work on. And I think I work on that with people many ways. And I'm sure that you've all probably encountered that. It's people that, you know, sort of identify what is that practice mindset? What's your mind like? What are you thinking about? What are you feeling when you're in a practice situation? You know, probably more relaxed and more in control and being able to perform more consistently and imagine that. And then I try to bring that practice mindset into the game or the competition. So that thinking of every competition is really practice for the next competition. So being able to practice just, you know, have that practice mindset as you're as your game mindset and have them be more similar. And, of course, visualization techniques is really important to visualize all the different scenarios that could happen. Being able to imagine that you'd be more comfortable in the competition rather than the OMG, oh, my God, here I am in the competition. Things are going to be really tough now, but to think of it as just another practice kind of thing is a really great way to handle all the different scenarios that could come up. Some other things that, are common, and you could, this would be a great way to, if you want to do marketing, to list some of those common problems on your websites and your social media for people, and then they, to know that these are kinds of things that they're not alone in these, and that it's something you can help with. So another big one is, of course, fragile self-confidence or lack of self-confidence, self-doubts. And so that's something that's really important. And it's a belief, your confidence, of course, is your belief in your ability to execute a task. And that's really key. And that separates great athletes from the rest of the pack. And so you need to have that confidence, even if oftentimes, sometimes newer athletes that come in might not have the experience, but somehow they can get, you can help them gain that new confidence and to be able to go through some of the techniques for that, of course, are to have them list their self-doubts and negative thoughts on the left-hand side of a page and then have them come up with about three power words or positive self-statements or reframing to counter those confidence technique, to counter those self-doubts. And then another area that's really common is high expectations. Being able to have those really strict demands that athletes make about their performance. So very results-oriented focus. I have to, do this time or have to get to a certain place to do well. So that can be a difficult one too. I think I heard a ding. Did someone else just join us too?
Yes, hello, Dr. John. This is Evan.
Oh, hi, Evan. Yeah, thanks for joining us. Yeah, good. Mm-hmm. So I was just answering Paul's question about what are common areas that athletes need help with, and you could, highlight these things on your marketing materials or websites to be able to, gain new clients, if you like. And so, the common areas are, sort of that practice. I do well in practice, but I'm a total mess in the competition, that kind of thing. Low self-confidence, also high expectations, kind of judging themselves. And some other really common ones are perfectionism, which goes along with that high expectations, really high, intense desire to succeed, a strong work ethic, but the perfectionist often, they underachieve because of fear of failure and wanting to so badly to succeed, and anything less than a perfect is not good enough. So that, causes them to really doubt their abilities. And so, you want to be able to help them with being able to, ask, okay, what would a great competition be for you, a great performance, and then what would a good performance be, and what would an acceptable performance be? So maybe they can identify three different areas or three different levels of performance and can see how each one of those can be helpful and can be okay in terms of what they accept with themselves, and that there's different levels of, there's not only one way to succeed. So those are other areas that athletes are common, come in with, in my experience, is fear of failure that sort of thing, and social approval. So really strong desire to, you know, do well for their parents or for the coaches, and so worrying about too much about what others think, that anxiety and tension. So it's a huge one. So you want to, and they have this very kind of serious, controlled mindset and lack of fun. The fun factor isn't there as much. So often if high school kids are trying to get into a good college, they're worried about scouts at the games, at the competitions, looking at them. So it's good to have them work on their own, being able to have that confidence within themselves and to quiet down that other channel. So those are some of the main things. There's other ones too, other areas to work on. I just want to highlight a few at the beginning here, and then we can work on our topics, and then come back to some more of those maybe afterward. Is that helpful, Paul, for you?
That was brilliant. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, your voice, the volume's a little bit low there on your voice, but Paul shared being able to, congratulations again, Paul, on having your triathlete client get accepted for Team Great Britain. That's really exciting, so glad for that. So, so I just want to welcome, before I start here, welcome everyone else and find out if you... Matt or Michelle or Evan, did you have questions too? And then I can note those and then, answer those as we go along here. Or anything to report from all of you guys?
This is Evan.
Oh, hi, Evan.
Mm-hmm.
Hey,
So I had a question regarding gymnasts, and I was contacted by someone a coach who was struggling with his gymnast, with a lot of them discovering the fear of hurting themselves, between 9 and 12 or 13, like before they're kind of doing it without really realizing they can hurt, and then when they realize that, it gets difficult for them to go past that. And even some of the girls who were like doing some figures, hard ones, and then starting to not be able to do them anymore. And so he was asking for suggestions, and so I was wondering if you had any suggestions on how to work through this fear of hurting themselves, right, doing some figures in gymnastics.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's great. Okay, so let me just note that here. And then let me just get all the questions, and then I'll get into our topic, and then real quickly, and then just come, because that is an uncertainty right there, for sure. And then I'll answer that in just a moment, and just to see if Michelle or Matt, do you have questions too, or other thoughts or comments?
Hi, Dr. Joanne. It's Michelle. Hi. Surprisingly, do not have a question today. I'm all good.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us. Yeah, it's good to have you here. Yeah, and...
Sorry I was late.
Oh, no problem. You're always so consistent. You're great about being on the calls. Appreciate it. I appreciate our conversations. Yeah, and Matt, do you have any good news to report?
Oh, yeah. Hi, guys. Well, of course, I love the topic for today, strategies for the unknown, because I do have some athletes getting ready for Nike Cross Nationals and Foot Locker Nationals. And, of course, there's always some unknowns that we have to prepare for. So, for example, we're using some core-specific quality sessions to get ready for Nike, because the course tends to be really a lot of tight turns, and it also goes out really, really fast in the first mile. And
are you talking about running races, or which kind of racing?
Yeah, this is cross country for this.
Uh-huh.
These races are where my top athletes tend to get their potentially they get noticed where they might have, say, a school like Stanford or Oregon. The coaches tend to go there and check them out, and so it's a big deal if they can put together a good race. And so, you know, last year I happened to coach the boy who won the men's division for NXR, and now his teammate that was on the team last year is having a phenomenal year, and he's wanting to kind of have the same type of opportunity. And there's a lot of pressure around that, a lot of anxiety. And one of the unknowns, for example, was whether or not the sprinklers are going to be on this year in the morning before the race. I don't know if that was a planned thing, but last year the race ended up being super muddy and slippery. And Jared, the kid who won, he had his spikes with him. He threw those on, and that helped out a lot. So, you know, there's just some things there that I was curious what your thought process was on. And, other than that, I've got North Face Championships also this weekend with myself and some of my other runners in San Francisco. So we are finishing up across the bridge. We're going to be in the new Chrissy Park. That's, I guess, the new finish line. So that course is now unknown to us. It's a new course. So just a good topic for today, and I'm interested in what you have to say about these things, I guess.
Yeah, great. Oh, is that a road race then you're doing?
That the North Face Trail Championships. That is, it starts in Sausalito, and it's a I think we climb about 3,500 vertical feet. So there's a lot of tough climbing in that course. Not too technical, but tough climbing. So it's a trail, almost like more like mountain racing.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Great. Well, let's see. First, I'll just talk about answer. Go to your question, Evan, about sounds like that's great. Thank you for your questions, Matt. So we'll talk about that cross country. I know I'm doing a cross country race this Sunday too in Golden Gate Park here, and you never know, all kinds of unknowns can be there with that sport as well. And so, and then Paul, you've got your athlete in Great Britain that's with a triathlon, there can be lots of unknowns about getting a flat tire am I going to be able to know how to change a tire quickly, that kind of thing, and what's the course like, and all of that too. So there's many unknowns out there, and I think just by way of introduction, I think that we need to realize that there's always going to be things that we don't that are unexpected, and there's things that you can control and things that you can't control, and so it's good to categorize each factor. There could be delays at the start of a race. It could be so that you're all warmed up, and then all of a sudden the race doesn't start. I know I've done that before, where I started a 5K race. They actually blew the gun and went off, and then they discovered that the course wasn't set up properly, and the cars were in the course, and they did two gunshots, indicating, we're going to stop everybody. This is like 2,000-3,000 people have to stop, come back to the starting line, and regroup. And then they said, "Okay, we're going to start in a half an hour from now. We got to clear the course." Crazy, uncontrollables. But everybody was really upset about that. But I used it to warm up. I said, "Well, this is a great opportunity to stretch and warm up more." And I actually ran my best race that day because sometimes you can use those uncertainties to your advantage. And so it's good to have a way to kind of categorize, okay, what things can I control and what things can't I control? And controllable factor is something that, you know, where you can, you can do something about it. Examples of that might be your technique and your, you know, your breathing, your tempo, your effort level, your attitude. You know, if you're in a game, a group game, it could be holding on to the ball, whether you hold on to the ball or you pass the ball, your accuracy. All those things are controllable as much as possible that we can do. And then uncontrollables might be things like, yeah, the weather and the crowds, what the crowds are saying, your teammates' performance, or other people. You know, I know, Michelle, you talked about before one competitor said, oh, I can only, and I think June in Texas does equestrian riding, and has, I think June might be on the call in the background, and said that, you know, I can only win if my competitors mess up. And so looking toward that, which is something you can't control, and she's focusing too much on the other competitors. Also things you can't control are referees and coach reactions and the playing of calls. And so the what you want to do is to do a quick assessment of each factor and categorize it kind of without overthinking it, put things into a category of uncontrollable. Is it uncontrollable or controllable? Or sometimes there might be a category in between, you know, some aspect of that might be something I can control. What part of it can I control? So in that way, you can shift your perspective to uncontrollable factors and focus on the how they influence you. And then so changing the way that your athletes perceive an uncontrollable factor often means, you know, you can help them shift to the different things that they can control. You know, three main things are your thoughts, your thought process, your emotions, how you feel about something, and then your behavior, your reactions. Those are three main areas that they can control. So athletes, you want to have them review those factors that are categorized as uncontrollable. And for then each of those factors, ask them, okay, well, what's a way that you could maybe influence this, or how would you deal with this? So is it something like if it's something like the weather, you know, it's a factor that can be something to be avoided or ignored? Like a bad, you know, if it's a bad call by a referee, like you said, Matt, sprinklers on the course is going to make the course wet. Is that something to be ignored, or is this something you can? One factor is ignoring something if you can't do anything about it. Like a bad referee call, sometimes it's best to just move on. And then asking yourself a second question, can I change how I think about this or change how I feel about it? Like, for instance, if you made a mistake or you got fouled by another athlete or something happened to you by someone else, then you could do what I call reinterpretation and change how you think about that. So you can decide, okay, well, what's good about this situation? Or, well, how can I use this to my advantage? Like Matt with the sprinklers, you can say, okay, well, I'm going to wear spikes or wear better spikes to prepare for that before the race. And then you can have athletes say, maybe prepare for that and say to themselves, instead of just worrying about the sprinklers, worrying about it, prepare for it. Say, okay, let's maybe practice running on wet grass and get good at that and be able to manage it better do exercises where you're having to run on wet surfaces and then be able to respond to it. So you say, okay, this can be an advantage to me because everybody else is going to get all thrown off by these the sprinklers or the wet pavement, but I can do really well here because I've practiced for it. So you can turn it into an advantage. And then you could say you could ask a third question would be, how can I react differently to factors like losing in a set of volleyball or losing to another person or losing one match and then have a resiliency. So looking at your reaction to things and saying, okay, maybe asking yourself, what can I learn from this? Or what's the next step? Or how do I keep going if there's a next match or a next game? How do I recover quickly and get into this next part here? So asking yourself, so those are three really good questions you can have your athletes ask themselves. How is this uncontrollable factor something I can avoid or I can ignore it if it's like a bad call by referee or rain? Or so avoid it or ignore it or ask yourself, can I change something to prepare for it, get better at this? Can I change how I think about it or how I feel about this? So that's something that we have a lot of more control over than we think we do. And then thirdly, how can I react differently to these factors? So so that's those are three good questions to ask, have your athletes ask themselves. And I was going to add one thing to the list of uncontrollables athletes might not think about, but over the last 10 years, since everyone's, the world has changed so much with phones, cell phones being part of our lives, that can often be we think of it as an uncontrollable factor, but really it is something that athletes can control. There's such a huge addiction there to constantly checking the phone, maybe right before a game, and then they get a text that maybe from their parents or from a coach or somebody something that's upsetting. So that is something that people can turn. They think it's uncontrollable, but you can turn that into more of a controllable factor by just turning off your phone or not looking at it before a game, not checking the phone every 2-5 seconds kind of thing, being able to put that out of sight. It's hard to do at first, but once athletes do it, I've found that they are a lot more in control and a lot more relaxed and can just think within themselves without having this external factor. Feel like someone's following you around in your pocket kind of thing. As I had a golf player where her father was texting her and she could feel the vibration in her pocket thinking, oh, my dad's upset again. And every time she'd feel that vibration in her pocket, that was an uncontrollable. And we turned it into a controllable by just saying, okay, why don't you just turn off, power down your phone completely during the games. And she hadn't even thought of that. So when she did that, she was able to just focus on the game. And the younger the players are, usually the more addicted to the phone they are. So that can be something that you can really help influence and tell people that they do. This is something you can turn into a controllable. So yeah. So those are some things I wanted to first touch on. And then, let me just go right to Evan with your question about gymnasts and fear of injury, because that's something that is an uncontrollable. Oftentimes wondering, I've been injured before, am I going to get injured again? Evan, are you there? Or did you have an example of something that just came up?
Yeah, I'm still there. So for the gymnast, it's the fear, when they're doing some figures just to hurt themselves. So that's holding them back to really do well, like even just do the figure, right? So I guess there can be different cases, one that already had a, you know, a fall and hurt, or just the idea of hurting themselves.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it's just the idea or the fear, is this going to happen again? Yeah, and it raises the anxiety levels just thinking about it. And, you know, fear is something that we all experience. It's an inevitable part of life. And in gymnastics, it's out there every day because they're doing these really potentially dangerous things. And so it's a powerful emotion. I guess, first of all, to talk about that with the athletes, that it is a powerful emotion that can override your thoughts and priorities and normalize it. So it's something that everybody fears. A lot of times athletes think I'm the only one that feels this way or that feels this strongly, but it is something that everybody fears. So that's a good thing to normalize it. And then talk about why it can be, yeah, particularly a tough feeling for gymnasts, because, you know, you're putting yourself at some risk every day, and to reach your full potential, you know, you have to persevere through those hard days and through the tough thoughts that you have, and keep mentally strong. And so here's some things that I thought of for you, Evan, and for other sports, you know, in the case of Matt with your runners, cross-country runners, and Paul with your triathlete, there's all that fear of injury too, and Michelle with, you know, volleyball players and other players that you're working with, there's that fear of injury. So asking yourself first, is it you know, acknowledging the fear and saying, okay, well, this is a little scary here, but saying, is it a specific skill or a specific routine that I'm fearful of? So identify which thing it is, because sometimes the fear starts with one thing that happened, specific skill, and then they generalize the fear to everything. You know, I hate gymnastics, or I'm afraid of gymnastics in general, but when it might just be something that specific skill that they need to work on. So, and talk about courage, that it's, you know, you don't get courage by avoiding things that you're scared of, but you face the fears and have that, it's a way, especially for girls too, they're always taught to not, you know, have difficulty with that word bravery, but to be, gymnastics can be a way to become more brave in practice and then in competitions. So the first step is to name the fear, I guess, to kind of say, okay, in your mind, clearly make it known, okay, what I'm scared of is this thing, and figure out what it is. It might be just a specific skill, just the balance beam, or just the floor, a specific skill on doing, you know, backflip on the floor routine, and giving yourself ability to analyze that, and so writing it down, and then keeping a journal to track your progress, and then asking your coach, okay, what do I need to do to get better at this specific skill? And often, of course, in gymnastics, you can have someone spot you while you're doing a skill at first, and have different levels of spotting. So they have their hand maybe on your back or something as you're to help you. Just knowing that person is there can really help to reduce the fear of having someone that can hold you a little bit if you falter. And then as you get more confident, then they're spotting you less, or they're just there but maybe not putting their hand underneath. So it can be a way of gradually moving away from that. So asking for help, identifying the skill, what it is that I'm afraid of, naming it, writing it down, and then asking for help, technical help with that specific routine, then that can reduce the fear, because preparation, I think, is the key to to reducing the fear there, and then asking him, what are you going through your mind? What questions are you asking yourself? Being able to say, well, first performing as coach, you can ask them, okay, what's the history of the fear? Did you have a bad fall, an injury, or in the past? And sometimes their athletes are never get a chance to describe that or what really happened or how devastated they were. So just talking with you about it could be a really good therapeutic activity. And then being able to describe it and how they were affected by that the situation, and then how they're affected now by fear in practice. And then so being able to talk about it with you, and then being able to be open with your with the athletes, and so being able to realize that you can help the athlete by, well, some of the techniques that we do in the Performing Edge program, of course, visualizing yourself doing it right. Oftentimes, athletes are continually visualizing the mistake that they just made over and over again, and then fearing that they're going to repeat that mistake. And of course, it's good to let them know if you keep the thing that we do is what we're visualizing in our mind. So if they're visualizing the mistake over and over, of course, the body follows those mental instructions and ends up redoing the mistake. So what you want to do is to have them provide a custom visualization for them, have them describe doing the skill with confidence and accurately and doing it well, and get all the terms down. Even if you don't understand the terms, it's okay. Just use the terms that they use. Like when I was working with pole vaulters at first, I didn't understand all the terms that they needed, but I got the language, and then used their language for it. And you just check your mate. You know, you're doing, saying the things correctly for what they need, and then have them visualize that, and so they're really building this, it's almost like a song, like singing a song over and over again that you like. They can visualize, play your visualization, and even when they're not playing the tape that you made for them, they can be, it'll become part of their thinking, so they can just visualize it in their minds. And so if you can do that right before they go to sleep at night, especially, then they'll have 8 more hours of visualizing. And just focus on that specific skill that they need to work on. And so being able to practice that, imagine every skill that they're doing in the routine with a real positive script in their imagination. So they could write it out for you, or they could say it for you, what the script that they want, how to say it, every real specific elements and the thoughts and emotions. And oftentimes it's good to, like when I did work with pole vaulters and with gymnasts, I would slow it down in the mind. You do a visualization where they do it in slow motion in their mind, which is such a unique thing. It allows them to see each part of the routine and see it more clearly. And they might see, oh, okay, this one part here, I need to work on that. Go over that a few more times in my mind. And athletes would tell me they've never had a chance to do that before, because, of course, you can't do a gymnastics routine in slow motion in real life, but you can in your mind. And so it's like when you play the piano, you do the left hand slowly, and then practice your right hand slowly on the piano, and then you put them both together slowly, and then you speed it up. And so gradually your brain learns to be able to execute things. It's just a lot of practice. But whenever there's a mistake, then you be able to go back and you can slow it down again. So you can visualize them, have them visualize doing the exercise very slowly in their mind, and then speeding it up to regular speed. and slowing it down as necessary. So visualizing that over and over again and saying to yourself, I can do this. I can do this. A good job, you know, kind of giving themselves that encouragement. And you can give that to them also in the visualization to say, yeah, you're doing great. Good job. That's really nice to say that over a few times to them. And then, of course, the negative talk, be able to replace that with positive talk for the different tactics that they're doing. You know, I used to have an athlete I worked with in gymnastics. She'd say, I hate the beam, I hate the beam, I hate the balance beam. So she developed this kind of hate relationship with the specific skill. But, you know, we talked about maybe what's one thing that you like or what's one time that where you did well on the balance beam and try to develop a more positive relationship with that particular skill. So practicing that and relax, you know, being able to relax and then trust your ability in training. That's a key area too for gymnasts and for, you know, Matt, for your runners also to be able to trust in your ability when it comes to the competition. Yeah, Paul with your Great Britain athlete, Michelle with your athletes, to be able to say, you know, I've practiced this so many times, I trust in my ability, and take a deep breath and then be able to say, okay, there's the fear is there, but it's you know, translated into maybe excitement and kind of a curiosity and say, I can do this. I practice a lot. I trust in my ability and here we go. And say to yourself, you're a rock star. reinforce what you've learned so in your mind. So yeah, those are, and then if you also, it's momentum is good if you have a success experience to have them keep going with that, to be able to keep moving forward, keep your mental game strong, continue to work on yourself and your surroundings. If you make one little bit of progress, to not stop there, but to keep going, stay determined to conquer that fear and anxiety whenever possible. And sometimes it's good to go, you know, from a difficult exercise, if that's not working, let's say the balance beam, they're making mistakes, then switch over to have them switch to back to, say, the parallel bars, uneven parallel bars, something they enjoy, is something that they're more comfortable with. Do that for a bit and then go back to the other exercise. So sometimes the mind needs a break to be able to do something you're comfortable with first. So I hope that this relates to our topic of uncertainty, that you never know what's going to happen out there with your body, and so you want to be prepared for what happens. And the best thing you can do is to prepare your mind to say, I'm ready for anything here, this is what a great experience to have, to be able to be out here competing or to be able to do what I do, you know, have that sense of gratefulness that can help, and joy to feel like I'm choosing to do this. I'm not just, no one's making me do this. I choose to do this sport, and this is what I'm good at. So have them remind themselves of that they do have the skill, and that this is how cool is this? I get to be active and have this and be able to learn all these great things and have this great coaching. So I hope that Evan, is that helpful or anything you want to add?
Yeah, no, thank you. That's really helpful. Lots of things. I liked really the idea to acknowledge the fear and even talk about it or be present. You know, we say we can't leave a place we haven't been to, like, meaning if you don't face at some point that fear of be with it, it's harder to let it go. So I like that. And I was wondering to which point we should have them, you know, face the fear, and what can happen, right? I understand we need to have them talk about it and and be, oh, okay, there's the fear is here, but to what I understand, we don't want them to visualize, you know, the falling or the hurting that much, right? So I guess there's a balance here to find when it comes to, on one hand, being okay with fear is here, that feeling, and then visualizing everything perfect. So that's what comes to me.
Yeah, right. There needs to be a balance there. And, yeah, you don't want them to visualize falling over and over again, for sure, because that's reinforcing what you want to avoid. But being able to visualize it, doing it correctly. And then if your mind goes to the falling part, to just be able to take a deep breath and maybe use the technique like the ball. Imagine a ball in front of you, a soccer ball, and put that thought in the fear of falling, put that in a soccer, a big beach ball, and then blow it away. So it's the size of a soccer ball, and then it's the size of a baseball, size of a golf ball. It gets smaller and smaller, and then it just fades into the background, and so that it's something you can just, with an exhale, you know, you just kind of blow that away, so it's in the background, and just acknowledge it's there, but we can turn down the volume, like a radio, turn down the volume on that fear, and sometimes fear can be a good thing, too, to say, okay, because it's fear of the uncontrollables, like we're talking about here, and fear can be something that is good to help us pay attention, like rock climbers, you know, say fear, they say that's a key factor in rock climbing because they realize, okay, I need to do my 10-point check here, make sure my harness is just right, the ropes are right, all equipment's working well. So they use fear to their advantage to pay attention, to be meticulous about their preparation and checking on things. So think of it as using fear as your ally, rather than something to that messes you up. It can be something that can help you. Yeah, that's good. So so that's great. And then with, Matt, you had your question with the athletes with cross country and the things that can, it can be like a dance out there when it's when the pavement's wet, right, or when the grass is wet. Everybody's falling or stumbling all over. So some of the things to do are to, of course, reflect on past successes. That's really good when you're like at the starting line of a race and being able to, give yourself credit, realize the reason I'm here at this race, like you said, you're working with athletes that are in the nationals, cross country nationals, that's fantastic. Congratulations on that. And that, it's an honor to be there at the starting line to be able to say what a great, thing this is. I've overcome stressful events and tough competitions in the past. That's why I've survived. That's why I'm here. So have them give themselves credit and reflect on what I've done that's been helpful, what you've done that's been helpful, and what you can do to improve even more this time. And I think one thing that's often overlooked, a technique for uncertainty, is to just be kind to yourself. You know, some people are to be better at dealing with uncertainties, to not beat yourself up for something that's unpredictable, but you know, just saying to myself, I'm being kind to myself, you know. You can take a few deep breaths and say, you know, it might be time, maybe the stressful situation will resolve itself. And to just have that patience so that you know what can happen there and you know that it's something that you can do, that sometimes it's something that you can just wait out and things will work themselves out. Like in a cross-country race, people can get really bunched up and be slipping on the wet grass, and sometimes it might be better to be hang out in back a little bit to let the athletes kind of sort out a little bit so that you're not stuck falling on other people, you know, in a big bunch. Same thing with bicyclists. They can, you can avoid a big crash just by staying out of the group. So being able to just see if sometimes just taking a deep breath, the situation can resolve itself, or a thought will come to you, like, I could approach this differently. I know I can do that, and take, you know, be able to take your own advice, I think, is another good technique, to be able to say, okay, if a friend came to me with this worry or this feeling of upset, what would I tell him or her? If I was, imagine a friend that has this worry of a fear or a fear of uncertainty, it's imagine yourself from the, you know, telling them what to do, giving them advice, and then imagine that situation, being able to, whatever you're telling that person, imagine taking your own advice to be able to follow what you told that other person and follow it yourself. So, and then that, you know, just things that we often overlook, other techniques are to help with uncertainty or just engage in self-care and regular self-care, like just giving yourself plenty of sleep, maybe extra sleep at night, you know, visualization or meditation, you know, take some deep breaths, listen to fun music, you know, eating right, all those things that we know we need to do. Social time, you know, just being able to get social support from friends is something, you know, friends in the sports and then also friends outside the sport are good to have so that you're not always in that competitive situation. And then seek support from people that you trust. So athletes can seek support from you, of course. That's the most important person as a performing edge coach, to be able to be available to them. And then you can tell them to reach out to their family and friends as well throughout the week to be able to talk about things and just develop those trust. Sometimes people don't have anyone they can trust, so their goal is to develop those trust relationships. And then getting back to control, being able to write down, okay, what are those things I can control? So, you know, just the things like if you've got a competition, laying out all the things that you need for the competition the next day, getting your gym bag ready beforehand and establishing a routine, to get yourself ready for your practices each day and for control and getting there early and being able to do all the things that, you know, your meal planning, getting your food ready for before a competition so that you know the right things to eat. Those are all controllables, and having taking along some food for afterward or snacks that you might need during a competition, so that you don't have to rely on just what the race people or competition people offer there. So, so those are some things, too. I know I wanted to ask, is Paul was calling from the UK. I don't know, Paul, if you're still there, if you wanted to share that you had mentioned with your jet skiing that a time that things didn't go your way, but you were able to turn it to your advantage?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Dr. Joanne. So it was about 3 or 4 years ago, so I do freestyle jet skiing. It was a competition, a European competition, and we get a two-minute routine, and I'd started my routine, and then I got the red. I was about 30 seconds into the routine, and then I got red flagged. So I had to start
which
again.
Which means what?
Really, really
and hard. What does red flag mean?
Just the judges weren't ready, so I'd started and they weren't ready. So it was their mistake, but I'd done 30 seconds of a flawless routine, so I was really, really angry about it. I was absolutely seething, and I had to start again, but actually I did even better the second time. and it went really well. I think I won that day. And so it made me realize that what was, you know, potentially a really bad situation actually turned out quite well. And also I learned a bit about myself, my level of aggression that I need to perform, you know, that anger had made me much more aggressive. And so, you know, I was able to think about maybe drawing on that state in the future.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Paul. And and then you recently got won the European Championships. Is that right, with jet skiing?
Yeah, formerly a European and a British champion.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Congratulations on that. So yeah, that's a great example of how to use uncertainty and bad referee calling or a difficult situation to use your anger and say, okay, I can do this even, rather than saying, oh, I just did my most perfect 30 seconds and it doesn't count. You could say, okay, well, I've got another second chance. Maybe I can do even better. You know, that was a great way of reframing it. Yeah. So, maybe I could ask others of you, also Matt and Michelle, Evan, do you have situations where you've turned uncertainty into, making things better, or you have questions about that, or with either your own experience as an athlete or with your athletes, clients?
Well, I think this is Matt, but just more, I guess, of a comment on it, and just see what you guys think about this. But I worked with Flora Duffy for the last couple months. So she's a ITU triathlete. Anyways, she had some injuries, and she had won a couple world titles, of course, and then injuries kept her back, and so this last year was really tough for her. And then we started to work a little bit more on what was holding her back, and because of the injury, she kind of knew that she didn't have the same rating, if you will, you know, that's like your running gait, your efficiency, as she had prior to the injury. But knowing that she was doing a lot of good protocol that we set up for her, for example, for connecting, right, while she's running, and she's able to now think the word connect and have that anterior-abdominal chain, for example, do a better job about connecting her ribs to her forefoot so she can push down into the ground more efficiently. I don't want to go into a rabbit hole, but just giving you an example. So now, instead of thinking about her quote-unquote weakness, it was more about let's think about what you can control. Let's think about what you're doing really, really well, which is you're connecting really well. You're able to push down into the ground better. So, coming off of, like, she just won Xterra Worlds by, like, 10 minutes, you know. And so coming off of this last year, which I know is a tough year for her, but she said she's never felt so good off of the bike. And I don't believe that we turn strengths into weaknesses. I guess that's the main thing I want to ask you guys about. But especially, when you get to work with somebody like Flora, it becomes very evident that, geez, even the world's best, they kind of have some similar traits. But even with Flora, you know, those doubts creep in. And then I think we have to arm ourselves with what our quote-unquote weaknesses are, and do those weaknesses really become strengths? Because I think we hear that if you work hard at your weaknesses, they'll become strengths. And I think that's actually kind of misleading. I've been kind of straying away from that kind of talk and thinking more about, you know, let's focus on what we know you can do well, at least a few things that you can do well, and let's recognize what we still have to work on that might be a challenge, or, you know, I try to eliminate the word weakness, but I call it more of a challenge, or your challenge side, let's say if it's a leg or something like that. But we start to talk a little bit more about, you know, for example, running up a long hill. You know, I had an athlete that freaked out in a race, and he's got Foot Locker Nationals coming up, which is or regionals, which has a huge hill in it that he has to be able to be able to kill the hill, so to speak, and stay with the top competition. And you know, he wasn't really braced for that in his mind in this previous race, and he had a physical reaction to that and a breakdown. And so I took him out on some a hill progression, and we did some hill work, and you know, we can see that he was getting more efficient up the hill, getting better times, for example. So he could see he's physically getting more efficient up that hill. But then what I did with him on the last session, last Saturday, is we went up this long canyon, but he had never been up it before, and I did that on purpose. He had no idea how long we were going to be holding pace for. Only I did. And I just told him, I said, all I want you to do is be comfortable being uncomfortable and focus on what you're doing well going up this hill. And about 15 minutes into it, he had no idea where this top was going to be, especially this particular canyon. You can't really see where the top is. And we just talked about that afterwards, how he dealt with that. And he was so focused on, you know, the other, you know, external factors, I think, that, you know, that helped him realize that, you know, I'm not as good of a hill runner as these other guys. And I'm going to accept the fact that I'm just going to get better at the hill, but more understanding that my strengths are going to come. For example, when I run downhill, I'm really good at stepping down the hill, and I can really make up a lot of ground. And so I'm just going to stay in contact and then take advantage down the hill. So I just need to change my thinking. I have to stop thinking that I've got to be as good as these other so-and-so athletes up the hill. They may be great at that, but that's not something that's going to be, you know, my strength, quote unquote, but it is something that I can manage by recognizing it and focusing on my strengths. Sorry if that's long-winded, but that's
yeah, I like that. That's a great example, Matt. Thank you. Yeah. So sometimes, yeah, realizing you're not, yeah, where your strengths are, and then where your weaknesses are, and yeah, realize you're probably, you're not going to win the race by just the uphill part, but think, okay, change your thinking, focus on, you know, just stay in contact, let the really good leaders, yeah, lead you up the hill, and then I'm going to get them on the downhill kind of thing. That's a good way to think about things, because you can't maybe change your entire body, or can't change your genetics, but what you can change is your thinking, and not focusing on those weaknesses, but just say, okay, I'm just do the best I can with the skills that I have, yeah, and focus on the downhill part, as opposed to, yeah, I'm not that great an uphill runner. You can always improve. But you don't have to be the top gun on everything, and we can't all do that, right? Can't be the top at every skill. So accepting that. So yeah, thank you, Matt. That's great. Yeah, and Michelle, are you still there? You just wanted to get any comments that you have, or questions, or thoughts on this?
Oh, hi, Dr. Joanne. Yes. When I work with quite a few tennis players, and for them, what comes up a lot in our conversation is a bad call, and it gets them really frustrated because they're junior level players and their opponents are calling those shots out when maybe perhaps they might have just been in, and it's getting into dodgy territory, and that. For tennis players, that's a lot of uncertainty going into a match. Is that going to be happening, and how can I handle that? And what I have found is effective is if they can turn, for them, the best response to that is getting angry or fired up in a way that actually improves their performance. And so thinking of it as an opportunity for them to get that next point or make that next shot and play smarter and more strategic, and just to sort of change their relationship to a bad call from one of being a victim to now let's be the aggressor in the next point.
Yeah, I like this. Great, yeah. And you're calling out the victim thing. So,
yeah.
Victim, poor me. Yeah, they did this to me, or they're not. Yeah, this isn't fair. Yeah, rather than doing that, which gets you kind of goes down, gets you into feeling sorry for yourself or going after them for the bad call. Yeah, just saying, okay, next shot, I'm gonna be so precise or make such a good shot that there's no question about that it's inside the line kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and so
yeah.
It can be a motivator. And I really like your comment on fear, because I'm learning how to kite surf right now, and I'm in Mexico, and there's some fear around kiting because things can get ugly real quick. And if you can, with the fear, it allows you to prepare better. You're not so nonchalant about it when there's fear in the background. So in some ways, it forces you to up your game, which is a good thing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Kite surfing?
Yeah, kite surfing and rock climbing is the same thing. And so what it ends up doing is it changes your mindset to one of, okay, we're going to prepare for all of these different contingencies and have a plan for that. And to me, then, it can accelerate your learning, that extra preparation, which is a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So thinking of it that way, are you there now in Mexico?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Why I was late on the call, because Thursdays are the only day I can get fresh fruit and vegetables at the market.
Oh, great. Well, it's good. Yeah, I feel like we're all, you're helping us all feel like we're on vacation with you in Mexico.
Yeah.
That's great that you made time to do our call even while you're on vacation here. And kite surfing, you can take us all kite surfing sometime.
You see it a lot with this sport, and you know it does. Like, people will stop it because the fear will take over in their mind, and they can't. And I liked your comment about we generalize our fear, and it might just be one aspect of the sport that is challenging to you, and instead of just making a general statement about the sport, focus on that really specific piece that's causing you concern and deal with that and manage that and overcome that.
Right. And sometimes it's, we generalize the fear to say, it's just this part that I'm not good at, and say, it's this whole sport is difficult. And then athletes will generalize further to say, I'm not good at kite surfing, or I'm just not made for soccer. I'm the one that kind of turn it on themselves, that I'm a loser kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or I'm not a good athlete. So it can really generalize way beyond, where if you can help the athlete to focus on the specific, where did this all start? It will start with one incident, maybe messing up on one little thing. So let's go back there and focus on that one little thing. And it may be just that small part that needs working on. So, yeah, that's great. And it's good that's so cool, Michelle, that you're kite surfing. I think it's really good that we can all be athletes and continue to do our sports in whatever level we can, and that you're taking up something. It's relatively new for you, is that, Michelle, the kite surfing?
Yeah, just my second season.
Yeah,
doing this.
And so... it's great that you can learn, take up a new sport like that. And it's something that's, I think, well, for you, non-competitive, right? Just doing it for fun, but it's really competing within yourself, right?
Oh, yeah, and it's really exciting because people are fast out there.
Yeah. It's something that can, something where the wind can just take off. And I know I used to do windsurfing and same kind of thing. You can have this great skill with low wind and think, oh, God, I'm good at this, or I really got this down in low wind. And then all of a sudden the next day or that afternoon, the wind really picks up and it turns me into a novice. All of a sudden, yeah, you think, oh, geez, now I got to start all over again, or the skills that I had I got to really up my game, as you say, in the high winds. Everything goes faster and stronger, and that's true. And it can be really tricky. So it's great to be able to say, use fear in a really positive way, to say, okay, I got this feeling and this is good. This is like signaling me I need to get off, to not be slacked here and not be too relaxed or cocky, but to be really focused and improve my skills and make sure everything is well prepared. I know when I was in Yosemite last summer and I watched these guys doing the slack lining, or they call it high lining, where they're essentially tightrope walking across the two from one peak to another, and below that it's 3,000-foot drop below the high lining. It's just amazing to watch, and the guys were talking about, got to prepare. I'm doing my 10-point check here, and I've got to everything gets checked twice, and then we're just going to go play out on the rope. And it was amazing to watch them talk about this as they're preparing to, go out on this slack lining. And there, in one case, it was 300 feet across, not just a tiny little place, but 300 feet from one peak to another. Yeah, so the wind, uncertainty could be the wind blowing that tightrope thing back and forth and all over the place. So, but to be able to hear them say, I gotta prepare, and if it's tougher conditions, then I prepare more, kind of thing. Yeah, so that's great. And, if Paul, if you're still there, to talk about how you deal with uncertainty with the with jet skiing or those difficult conditions. I'm not sure if you're still there.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah.
Good.
I think I focus more myself on just being in the right emotional state, on being in the zone and in the present. Because when things come up, I've only got 2 minutes. I don't really get a chance to think about what I might do or how I might think about it differently. So I just focus very much on my emotional state and managing that and staying in the present.
Yeah, exactly. So that's great. So just being able to have that presence, and I'm sure you have that fear inside or kind of nervousness, but being able to use the nervousness. So great. Well, I wanted to, let's just finish up with if each person could just say one nugget, something that was most helpful for you, a takeaway from the call today, something that maybe you can use with yourself or with your athletes, and then just a note that our next call, it would normally be the 28th, for Thursday, but that's actually Thanksgiving Day. So we'll have our call 2 days before on the 26th. If you can mark your calendars for that, it would be great. Have you all join us at November 26th, Tuesday, instead of Thursday, this next one. and we'll talk more then. So can you each say, it would be great to just share what's one nugget that you thought of today that was useful for you or helpful, something that you can use, take with you for your own self or with your work with athletes. So this week anyone can jump in.
Dr. Joanna, Michelle.
Yeah.
I like your comment on practice mindset and just talking to the athletes about getting really clear on and on what their mindset is during practice and trying to duplicate that during competition.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So try to bring that in. Say, and then being in the competition, you can actually say to yourself, here's my practice mindset. I'm in my practice mindset now. Yeah, great. Good. How about Evan or Matt or Paul?
This is Evan.
Yeah.
Well, I like the whole discussions. Thanks for everyone who, who participated. One of the things I take is like all the discussion around fear, definitely, and talking about it and acknowledging it and using it as an ally. Definitely relate to that. I did, skydiving. I think I shared that. Started after a 14 years break, and so I definitely could relate to that. The guy was saying, this is a safe sport when you treat it as dangerous, and it is. It starts to be dangerous when you treat it as safe, and that relates to what you said, like using fear as, up-leveling your game. And so that's what I'm taking away. And I like the idea to just prepare your mind to be ready to anything. Like just make it part of the game that anything can happen, and it's in your job to go with that, right? It's part of the game. So... and I think it's really a matter of mindset. So preparing for that, that's what I use a lot with runners, when the strategy of the race is sometimes not going the way they would like and they get frustrated. I'm like, well, that's part of the game and it would be too easy, right? It's part of the challenge to, athletes love to surpass themselves physically, but like it's part of the game to surpass themselves mentally and be like adapting to whatever is coming on. That is not expected. So that's what I'm taking away.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Thank you, Evan. And it's great to think of, like, we think of our, muscles, working out my deltoids or working my quadriceps. You can think of it adapting as a muscle. Working out my adapting muscle to my flexibility muscle to be able to adapt to whatever is going on. Think of that as a skill, actually, and a muscle that we can improve on. So great. Yeah. How about Matt and Paul?
Takeaway?
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I think the bit that really struck in my mind on the call was the idea that, a fear about one single thing can quickly become generalized to a wider fear, and actually being able to dig down into what that specific fear was allows you to, address where the fear is coming from and some techniques to deal with that. So that really stood out for me in my mind, just to remind myself that, generalization can be down to something specific.
Right. Okay, great. Yeah. And then it might be two things, too. You think, okay, if I focus on this one thing and then I can work on the skill for that, then I can, okay, now I can move to the next thing I was afraid of, and I got success here, so I can be successful with conquering my fear of the next thing. So, great. Thank you, Paul. And Matt, you have a takeaway?
Yeah, I was honestly going to say, exactly what Paul said. So I agree. That was kind of what I took away as well.
Yeah, focus on one thing and recognize when they're going wider with a fear, anxiety. Yeah, and it's oftentimes that's something that when I talk to someone on the phone or parents will call and say my child is really anxious or fearful of what, and I say one of the things that helps me get clients and that can help you get clients is to say, yeah, this is a really important time to be talking about that, because if you're if that fear, anxiety, if you work on it now, then it will help build confidence in that your child for the next for upcoming all the other things in life that they're going to deal with. But if they don't deal with the fear, anxiety right now, then it can spread to become more anxious and as a student, as a worker, and other areas too. So it's important to work on this now and to kind of create an urgency there to work on this. Just like an illness or a physical illness to, you know, prevent it from spreading, kind of thing, to help you get confident in sports so that you can get confident in every area of life. So that can really help you get clients with just saying something like that to a prospect that's calling you or anywhere that you'd like to work or to give talks to. So thank you. Thank you, everyone. That was a great conversation. This is awesome. Our interactions get better all the time, I think. And I'll get the recording up shortly, and then we can have our next call on, I'd say, November the 26th, Tuesday, rather than Thursday, and get you all ready for Turkey Day. So that sounds great. And if you have questions for the next call too, you can always email them to me. So yeah, I always love your questions. They're awesome. So thank you. It was a really great conversation with you. Always my pleasure to be with you all today. So we'll talk soon and have a good week, everyone. And thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Yep.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Bye now.
Have a good
bye,
one.
Everyone. Bye now. Thank you. Bye.